So I invented this game by an off chance, walking up to people and striking up a conversation and going like, "So, do you have LinkedIn?" And they're like, "Well, yeah." I'm like, "Okay, good. I want to play a game with you. So, we're gonna guess how many connections we have in common. The person who gets the closest number wins, and the other person has to buy them a lunch in the future or a fika, depending on your price range." And then all of a sudden, like, the conversation changes, right?
Welcome to the Swedish podcast, a podcast of conversations about the paradox of life between two cultures. Hosted by Jill Leckie. Welcome back to the Swedish podcast. I'm so excited about this conversation. I know I say it every week, but this one, I wish I had had this conversation 6 years ago. Honestly, this conversation is a truth bomb of how to navigate new professional or new cultural communities and networks, and what is expected of you to put into those networks before you can take back what you think you need. It's with the wonderful, the enigmatic Shayna Harrison. She is a super networker and she's a mega, mega supporter of the immigrant and expat community here in Sweden. I think this is one of the most valuable conversations that we'll have on the podcast. So, Shayna, I don't think I've met anybody in Sweden so far, and that's 6 years of being here, that doesn't know you. You are what I would call a super networker. You have a superpower when it comes to connecting with people and meeting with people. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you about this superpower, this kind of networking, like, superpower. Because I think it's something that you don't really think about when you first come to a new country. First of all, what for you is a network?
I think a network is just a cluster, a collection of people that all, I don't know, in my head, they sort of all kind of do different things, but then I'm able to sort of map them out. It's like the Matrix, like seeing the ones and the zeros. Like, you do this, okay, you're over here, you do this, you're over here. And then for me, it's like seeing that connection, being like, oh, you're doing the BBC thing, you should talk to Maddie. You know what I mean? Like, I guess it's whatever's in my head, right? Whoever comes across my radar. And then all of a sudden you're sort of in my, I always call it like the digital or the mental Rolodex.
Okay, before we go any further though, let's get our listeners to know you a little bit better. What's your origin story? How did you become to be Swedish?
So Sweden was never on my list. It was never on my radar. It was, you know, just this country. And I was probably like all those other lovely people that confuse Sweden and Switzerland. Yeah, I'm really terrible when it comes to geography. And let's see, I was 23 years old and I was young and single and without major debt. So I decided to pack my bag and do a year abroad. And I think I told you this the other week, in all honesty, if I had known that Scotland was part of the UK, I would have moved to Scotland. This is like people are going to see me for, like, you know, how like slow I am on certain points. I'm very smart and quick-witted and other stuff, but then it's like, what, Scotland's part of the UK? No. So I decided to go to Dublin in Ireland because I really like the Irish accent. Like, I just think it's really like sweet and it's got like a nice melody. So I did one of those student working abroad visas and moved to Dublin, Ireland, and you know, landed without a job, found an apartment on the internet. This is before Facebook even existed. Took a few weeks to get to the country, got there, and then met this, like, you know, the international crew. You meet your, like, people your age that are all doing the same thing. And a few months in, you know, there were Swedes, Norwegians, Danes, Australians, Canadians. We were everything. And let's see, I moved there in March. By May, or we had this barbecue. It was a white trash themed barbecue or a knacker barbecue. And there was this, you know, nice, good looking guy sitting next to me. And we were having this great conversation. And, you know, he said the word girlfriend. And I was like, oh, you know, conversation shut down. But, you know, you're young and you're single. We ended up, this crew just having all these amazing parties, these really weird themed barbecues and just having a great time. And Peter, the guy that I met, we just kept showing up at the same parties, and every party he'd go like, Shayna, and I go, Peter, and we just have so much fun together. But I met the girlfriend, right? And I'm like, she was awesome. And so at the end of the summer, we're at this party, and he's sitting there, and he's, you know, I came in, it was 3 o'clock in the morning. I remember I came in 3 o'clock in the morning. He's sitting on the floor and he's upset. And I go and sit down next to him. I'm so used to him going, Shayna. And I'm like, what's wrong? He's like, someone stole all my beer. Now, for anyone that's lived abroad and knows, like, when you, you know, the LC, the liquor commission closes, you go to the dodgy bars and you buy. And then when the dodgy bars close, like, that's it. There's nothing you can buy. So I'm like, well, I have some. I'll share it with you. Anyways, we ended up sitting there drinking, have a laugh. And then he's like, I've been meaning to ask you out all summer. And I'm like, oh, what? Wait, huh? Like, you have a girlfriend. And then he told me this heart-wrenching story that, you know, so they had dated, he'd moved over, she came, they were trying to figure things out, but then decided it just wasn't going to work. And then she actually was diagnosed with cancer. And instead of them trying to explain the whole story to everyone, they just explained they were boyfriend, girlfriend, like, because then he was going back and forth to help her. And so he told me the story, and I was just like, oh my God, like, you are, like, you're a saint. And then, you know, things, you know, he asked me out. The next day we went on a date, and we've been together ever since. That's like 16 years ago now. And that was my sort of introduction to Sweden. You know, he's a Swede. But I remember our first date and me being like, so Sweden. And I remember him distinctly, like, drawing it on a napkin, like, where it is in the world. I have no idea. So we were dating, and then the visa ran out in Ireland, and we're like, okay, well, we like each other. Like, let's move to another country. So we had gone to Scotland for a weekend and decided, like, why don't we just go here? You know, I can get the next working holiday abroad visa. Yeah, so we lived there. And then, you know, the whole, like, natural progression happened. So he proposed, we got married, the first son came. And then when the second son was on his way, and again, for those listeners that have lived in the UK that have kids, you know, daycare is crazy expensive. I was like, so this line of Sweden that you've been grooming me for, talking about subsidized childcare and, you know, like, VAB, what is VAB? So I am that immigrant you love to hate. I came over for the benefits, right?
Going, didn't, like, we all love, didn't we all really? They sold us on all the benefits. And how long have you lived here now?
So it's been 10 years. So we moved in 2011. Yeah. And my youngest son just turned 10 yesterday.
Oh.
His birthday request, he's so easygoing, was the Biltema korv. So Biltema did this thing about, like, you know, they have the 5-crown korv.
Okay.
And so now you can buy, like, the t-shirt, the swim trunks, the flip-flops, the towel, the hat, the sunglasses. So he's decked out in, like, head to toe.
Korv.
Biltema korv.
Whatever floats your boat, man.
Like, what a great ad agency that, you know, like, they're going to make so much money on all their korv outfits.
I think this is a point that I get, I'm kind of like, my ears prick up, and I'm like, okay, so when did you decide that you're going to become this super networker? Or was it always something, if you look back on your lifetime, was it always something that was a part of you? This canny ability to be able to connect people.
I think I've been doing it my entire life. And it's just sort of escalated as I've moved abroad, going like, okay, you know, you need to find your community, your tribe. You need to find the people that are going to kind of get you through the day and help you find the jobs and the apartments and the whatever.
What was the landscape for internationals arriving in Sweden when you first arrived here?
English-speaking mums in Sweden, like the old school site that was off.
The forum?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That was it.
Yeah, I remember
it. I miss the forum. You're part of it, right? Like, I miss the forum days where it was just, you know, you could search and find and the chats. And but then, like, I moved here right at that cusp where the forum became the Facebook community.
Yeah.
Yeah, no one really knew how to.
It was change. It was, I mean, digital change. And people were like, what is this? You know, how are we going to make it work? What's happening? No, I remember the Mums in Sweden forum. That was one of the first things that I found as a resource when we first decided that we were going to move to Sweden in 2014. Of course, you know, the first thing you do is you get onto Google and you start searching for whatever you can find that's going to, you know, make that transition a little bit easier. And it was one of the first things that I found But yeah, so you think about what there is now, like all of these social media accounts and websites and information portals that you can find access to, you know, literally checklists of what you should do and what you should bring. There was none of that back then.
No. I mean, there was the local and there was English speaking moms. But I think, you know, if you talk about, you sort of find like what's your common link with everything. And for me, it was like having kids.
Yeah.
Which I think a lot of people, but then there's a lot of people that come over for studies.
Yeah.
And then that's a common link. Yeah. Or they come over for work and then they make that group of friends, mm-hmm. right? Like, mm-hmm. then it's yeah, that you just sort of find your tribe, right? Mm-hmm. And then build off of it, like branch out from it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's how I kind of got to know you.
Yeah.
Because everybody that I was meeting through Little Bear Abroad or through the English speaking mums Facebook group and stuff like that, everybody knew you. Everybody knew who you were.
It took us this long to get together.
I know, isn't that crazy? It's like 6 years. What I think is going to be really valuable for our listeners today is to hear about how your canny ability to network and to create connections has really helped you develop your career here.
I think the key thing right there is it's personal and professional. I've never seen the lines, right? Like they're just one thing together. Like if everyone is personal and professional, right? You have no idea when you're going to sort of waver between the two. So you always have to treat everyone as if they're, I mean, like to me, everyone I meet is a friend.
This is where I start to have a problem with networking personally. Mm-hmm. Is because I am very sensitive to integrity. And if I don't feel as though someone is coming to me fully as themselves or fully with the intention of having, you know, integrity with me on a par, yeah. Then I kind of just switch off. I'm just like, I'm not interested. I don't really want anything to do with you because I can't trust that you're being fully engaged with me because I wear my heart on my sleeve, even in my professional settings, even in my work. And that's an interesting point that you just made. I hadn't thought about that before, that maybe that is what I do as well, is I actually want, you know, I come to it as from a place of friendship and trust first.
I mean, like you're going to meet different people throughout, you know, your life, and I don't know if I do it naturally, but I was like, oh, I want to be friends with pretty much everyone I meet, and then they go down, and then I'm like, okay, so do we have anything in common? Okay, no, like will we? A big one is, do we live on the right side of the city?
Yeah,
right. I don't know if that happened to you, but I'm like, are you on the south side or the north side? Because it's really going to make a difference in how often we're going to see each other in the physical world when it's there, right? Mm-hmm. Or like, you know, do you work in the city or do you work somewhere else? Like, again, those are sort of like the touch points of like, will we have those commonalities?
Yeah.
And then it, I don't know, I can't even say, it's not like I have a ranking system for people, but it's like, you know, you have something that I might be able to help you with. And again, it just comes to that whole Rolodex, like, and usually I don't even ask what people are looking for. I just sort of listen and figure out like, oh, hey, you're doing this or you're doing that. Would you be interested in this? I can't, you know, shove it down people's throats being like, hey, I know this person you should meet. But I'm like, I actually do know this person. Would you be interested? Mm-hmm. And then I can ask the other person. But I don't know. For me, it's one of those things that I really enjoy doing. I enjoy connecting, you know, connecting the dots and seeing sort of that landscape of who's out there.
Going on from that, like someone said to me quite recently, in fact it was a mutual acquaintance of ours, that's ironic, who said that she really believed that the difference between networks and communities was that network was the head and communities was the heart. And I kind of get the, you know, but what I'm hearing you say is that actually it's just, you know, it's all together at the same time, you know, that's the approach that you take.
No, but I think that's true, but like the network is sort of the head and the community is the heart. Because no, actually I can't even answer that. Is the network the head and the community is the heart? I don't know.
It's an interesting one to think about. It left me, for a couple of days, left me going, ooh. So we've already established that you think you've been this super network your entire life. So when you arrived in Sweden, how did you kind of take up that mantle again? Because you're thrust into this new space, this new place. You have Peter.
Yeah.
But how did you start? It's kind of like starting the Matrix all over again. I mean, that's a big mission.
That is. I think, so for, as a new mom, you know, you become your mommy fika. Like, that's sort of like the bandwidth that you have. You don't really go outside that. You're not going out for dinner or drinks or whatever. Like, that's it. And when that sort of phases out, because, I mean, you tend to be friends with people that also that have kids around the same age. Because if your kids are super far apart in their age group, then you really, I mean, there's not often that the kids want to play together. And that's usually... I mean, I think, you know, you said with Little Bear Abroad, you probably had like a specific age group over there, right? Because if I brought my 10 and 12 year old, they'd be like, okay, mom, we want to go home.
Yeah.
Now.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. But finding the network here, I think, so Meetup was a super huge resource, and going to find things that I was passionate about. So like TED, which I was super passionate about, listening to interesting ideas and topics and speakers. Mm-hmm. And also finding different internationals. I went to Internations. It's meant to be, no, this is my experience. This is not what it's meant to be like. It's meant to be a place for internationals to come and meet. But when I got there, I found, or I felt there was a meat market. Like, I came, and I don't know if this is my culture, but like, I'll come as a single woman to something because I'm interested to meet people and I'm not shy. I'll go and say hello and da da da. And I remember, like, distinctly three different guys seeing a wedding ring on my finger and being like, you're not worth my time. I was like, oh, okay. So
that's a really interesting point, because we had Sam Govinder on here a few episodes ago. She was the regional Girl Gone International rep. And she, you know, she, similarly to yourself, knows everybody in sort of international circuit in Stockholm, has organized hundreds of events. And she said something, she said the same, one of the reasons why people enjoy our Girl Gone International events is because they know they're not going to be forced into this that situation where it's kind of, you know, yeah, that kind of meat market style speed dating for international situation.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, so that one was kind of a bust. But when I got here, like, the tech scene was just starting to bubble.
Yeah.
And I found that was sort of the niche as well. That was the entrepreneurial mindset, the people willing to sort of take chances and risks, majority international people, but also Swedes, right? A lot of, and like, I've met a lot of my really close Swede friends, because I see in a lot of groups of people like, I have no Swedish friends. I'm like, yeah, but you just need to know where to find them. Right. And so that, again, through Meetup, was able to sort of find those. And I don't know how Meetup's doing these days since WeWork bought them, but Meetup was definitely sort of a natural place to be like, you know, find something happening on a Tuesday night in Stockholm. Mm-hmm. And then you'd have like a whole list of things. Be like, okay, this is happening. I can just show up. Mm-hmm. Another good one was Toastmasters.
Yeah, I've heard of Toastmasters. Mm-hmm.
I met so many of my closest friends there. And again, I think it just comes down to like, you know, the same sort of passion. Like, we're all interested in talking and presenting and improving our ways of, you know, improving ourselves and leadership skills, right?
So I wanted to come back to that, because it sounds to me from this, I mean, there's going to be a lot of people listening to this going, oh God, that's like mega, you know, putting yourself out there. And it does sound like you made a choice to be very proactive.
Yeah.
Was there something that was driving that?
Yeah, finding a job. To me, Sweden's like the mafia. You need to know someone, marry someone, or murder someone to get in.
Yeah.
But once you're in for life, and I have not murdered anyone yet.
Yet.
My husband and I watch 48 Hour Mysteries sometimes, you know, the US TV show. Number one, we're like, first of all, we're never moving to the US because you can get like arrested for anything and accused of murder. And I was like, the amount of conversation I have when I talk about the mafia and murdering, I would end up being like accidentally arrested and I wouldn't really get out of it. Like,
no, but I think it's a really good analogy. I know that nepotism is a strong word to use, but I think there is a significant degree of that. in the Swedish labour market. And it's all about trust. Again, you know, I think Swedes are, or the Swedish job market is reliant on, you know, people that you know that they can trust. And I've been told, I don't know if this is true or not, but it's got a lot to do is with the kind of the employment law as well. So there's such a long period of, it's so difficult to fire someone.
That,
you know, you have to be really, really sure. So go on the word of somebody that you trust and value their opinion before hiring a complete stranger.
And 6 months, it's so long. Like, seriously, like 6 months is too long in my opinion. I think 3 months, you should know by then if you're gonna work out or not.
Definitely. I mean, in these days as well, because so you know, the sort of career, the lifelong career stuff is over now, and people are only staying in jobs for 2 to 5 years. So it's like, what?
I don't think nepotism, like, I haven't seen a lot of nepotism. I've seen it, but I haven't seen it like tons. But I do agree with people. I mean, because nepotism is what, hiring your friends, right? And I think it comes down to, yeah, it's vouching and vetting. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. if you have more people that can say lovely things about you and you have a way to prove it, you know, mm-hmm. then the more people are going to actually take you seriously. And it's almost like having like a stamp of approval or like a brand on your CV, yeah. you know, like the minute you have, and they say it's like the domino effect in Sweden, right? The minute you have a Swedish company on your CV, yeah. like it is a domino effect. And I've definitely seen that myself, mm-hmm. you know, as after the first one was there, and it's like, people actually take you seriously because somebody's vetted you, right?
But that's also where the network comes in. You know, you just said you need to have lots and lots of people who can say lots and lots of lovely things about you. And that yeah. is exactly why having that group or the community or that you've built around you to have all these lovely things to say about you is so valuable. Now, I'm going to say this. I hate with a passion the phrase your network is your net worth. I hate it, okay? Because it gives me a sense that there's the, you know, you're only valued, the only value that you have is depicted through your, I don't know, like
your surroundings, the people you surround.
Yeah and I'm just like, that's just nah. But I obviously totally and utterly acknowledge the fact that having a group of individuals, professional, personal, whatever, friends around you who you can rely on and who can rely on you is, well, worth its weight in gold.
Absolutely.
Which is why I came up with my little analogy of a bank. So, you know, you deposit into it, you deposit into the network, and you can withdraw from the network when, you know, you need help, support, guidance, whatever.
So, and this is something that I've noticed a lot of, you know, like there's the givers and the takers, and then there's the matchers, which is like the Adam Grant version of it.
Yeah.
But then there's the people that go in and take into the overdraft.
Yeah.
Right. And you need to be very careful with your network that you are, you know, taking out what you can take in, and you're not going super in debt with that person.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's something, I don't know if a lot of people there, because I am such a connector, I get a lot of people that just reach out to me being like, hey, can you help me with this?
Mm.
And they don't know the other side of it, right? They don't know that I probably get 10 of those messages a day.
Yeah.
And they're not going to know because I'm not going to tell them, but there's certain people that might show up time and time again and just want
mm-hmm.
and don't give.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. And there comes a point where sort of that,
yeah,
you know, you're depleted.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you really have to be very cautious of that and make sure, and it doesn't have to be like a tit for tat, but you have to make sure that you, right, it's like sort of the pay it forward too, but also be very cautious of who you're going to time and time again.
Absolutely. And ensuring that you can give as much as you can take. Yeah.
Exactly.
We've established that having this network, having this, developing this group of people and being proactive about it is, and proactive about developing it, so actually going out and looking for it, taking an interest in things that you know, at home in your homeland, you may not have actually been doing. So you may not have been going to networking events, or you may not have been, you know, joining your local Toastmaster group or whatever. But it's something that is going to prove enormously valuable. So when you were doing all of this networking and all of this, and kind of going, putting yourself out there, Was language ever a problem?
No, absolutely not. No, I think, and again, this works for Stockholm. I can't say for the rest of Sweden, but Stockholm is such a metropolis now. And again, I think the tech scene really helped it, but you can speak English fluently with pretty much everybody. And even the ones who say my English isn't great, they speak English. I'm like, your English is better than mine.
Yeah.
So it's a blessing and a curse because at the same time, you know, you like, obviously I'm going to be here for the rest of my life. I want to be able to speak fluently. I have a little bit of an impediment when it comes to learning languages. So it's, you know, I want to be able to return that favor and flip, but it's not there for me personally, but there's other people that can make it. But yeah, you could definitely get by in English.
I've noticed that as well, because I've recently started working in the tech scene as well. And I noticed a huge shift in attitudes towards using English in a professional setting than it was before, when I was working in a sort of social community organization setting, where kind of I was expected to be able to speak Swedish and do my business in Swedish, specifically with public entities and so on. But as soon as I kind of changed industry, changed silo, as it were, there was no problem. And it was absolutely, you know, it was a given almost that I changed, you know, spoken English and that nobody had a problem. Did you come up against any barriers when you were kind of starting out?
I think I still do. I mean, there's a lot of times where you might walk in and you know the official language is English, and it's, you know, it's plastered everywhere, or it's like the official communication directive. And then you'll be that one immigrant in the room, and someone will be like, so does anyone here not speak Swedish? And then you always have to raise your hand being like, and then they, you know, reluctantly switch. Like, I think that's just a constant barrier. And unfortunately, I know, like, it's not done maliciously, but it's still one of those things. When you talk about like inclusivity and belonging, it's one of those things. I don't think Swedes necessarily realize that they're doing something, they're putting somebody out. They're isolating someone or a few someones in that specific room. But you know, that you can play the other card and be like, well, you've lived here for 10 years, you should be able to speak Swedish fluently. And it's like, you're kind of stuck between the two.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, I'm in a similar position. I've been here for 6 years now. And, you know, by rights, I should probably speak it fluently. I can get by. But there's absolutely no other way that I could conduct business in Swedish. No way. I wouldn't, you know, there was no way I would sign a contract if I didn't completely, fully understand every single aspect of what I was signing a document for. So it's all very well said and done saying that, you know, you should be able to speak Swedish, but Swedish conversationally and Swedish business, they're two very different things.
But LinkedIn, like, LinkedIn's definitely been a digital asset and a tool. And the other thing that I've told a lot of people is, like, your digital breadcrumb is super important, right? Like joining a podcast, being, you know, being interviewed, or getting an article published, or even producing content yourself. Like, that is a digital breadcrumb. And all in all, it sort of goes into your story of vetting and adding content to yourself and your story.
Yeah.
But I do have to tell you something fun. You know, when I started doing this, it really sort of changed the landscape. But it requires you to be a little bit outlandish and to have bravery to go and do it. So I used to work in sales, which obviously also needs you to be very, you know, not being afraid to pick up the phone and saying like, hey, how are you? Blah, 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 trying to get to the point of you trying to sell them something. And I remember going to this one event a few years ago, again, when events actually existed in Stockholm. And knowing that everybody in that room was a potential prospect, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody had something that they could buy from me, but I had no idea who anyone was because there was no event app. There was no, you know, guest list.
Yeah.
And this event, they didn't serve coffee. And I'm like, that is like, oh, numero uno. Like, you need to have coffee at an event in Sweden or in anywhere, right? I don't drink coffee, thankfully. So I was like, I'm okay. And I don't think they had any liquor either. And that's also liquid courage, right? That gets the conversations going. So it's a pretty dry room. But again, knowing everybody is someone interesting. So I invented this game by an off chance walking up to people and striking up a conversation and going like, so do you have LinkedIn? And they're like, well, yeah. I'm like, okay, good. I want to play a game with you. So we're going to guess how many connections we have in common. The person who gets the closest number wins, and the other person has to buy them a lunch in the future or a fika, depending on your price range. And then all of a sudden, like, the conversation changes, right? So we're sitting there and I'm like, and then I was like, okay, we can only ask each other one question only. At that point, we'd been probably chatting for like 2 or 3 minutes. And usually I'd be like, ah, do you play any musical instruments? They're like, what kind of question is that? I'm like, do you play any musical instruments? Oh yeah, I play the piano. I'm like, oh, cool. Okay, you can ask me anything you want. And they'd be like, how long have you been in Sweden? And I'd be like, 5 years, right? And then I'm like, okay, that's our one question only. Now we have to guess a number. And then at this point, I'd be like, okay, like, I'd write my number down on the phone. I'm like, if we both say our number out loud, we can influence each other. So I'd say my number, they say their number, and then I'd look them up on LinkedIn, and you can see your mutual connections,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You might have zero, you might have one, or you might have a lot.
Yeah.
Regardless of the point, is like, even if you have none, you've still played the game. But if you have one or more than one, you change the conversation. You're like, oh, hang on a second. How do you know so-and-so?
Ah.
And I remember saying this to someone going like, oh my God, we have the most random mutual connection. And then our conversation the whole night was like, just, you know, like, it just really sort of zeroed in on us being connected in such a different way.
That is such a brilliant game. I'm so going to use that the next time I go networking.
But this is, it's so hard. And especially when the pandemic hit, like, you can't necessarily do, you know, that, like, let me have 10 people over for dinner and see where the conversation goes. But I would, like, you know, I would do this. Actually, I had this concept that I was going to do, and I'm so glad that I pulled out at the last minute, because it was December of 2019. And I had the restaurant lined up and everything. And the concept was Dinner for the Lost Souls.
Oh my God.
So, because, you know, like, November till,
yeah, yeah,
February, March, it's like pitch black, yeah, and everyone goes and hibernates. And so the concept was that I would invite 20 people from all different circles that I knew, or maybe someone would invite someone, but then we would have this lovely dinner at a restaurant and just great conversations. And at that point onwards, you have no idea where those relationships are going to go. Are they going to flourish? Are they going to die dead? But somebody would have something to offer somebody. Like, that's, if you bring 20 people together, there is that.
Yeah.
That's going to happen, yeah, right?
Definitely. I would be, I'd be up for that. Can I come? Please invite me.
Well, see, now this is the thing. When we can start to get together again, I'd love to relaunch it. The challenge with it, and nothing against the restaurant, they're awesome and they were going to be great, is that I'd have to pay up front for everybody.
Oh my God.
And my thing was, what happens if, you know, people can flake, right? So you could be up 500 crowns for someone's dish, and then all of a sudden, like, I don't have that kind of money. So I need to figure it out.
The most terrifying networking experiences that I've ever had have been in kind of clinical conference rooms with
business cards.
Oh man, you go and you're there because there's somebody speaking that you said that you were going to go and watch, and then, you know, there's a enforced networking period that you have to all go and stand and talk to people, and I'm just like, oh, just you know, can we just have a little bit more imagination about the networking
event? It comes down to how you are as a human, right? Like, you can totally flip that script and make it fun. Like, and this is my other big tip to people, is find your wing person, right? And I think you and I would be really great wing people. Right? Because then all of a sudden, I'm not introducing myself, I'm introducing you, yeah, right? I'm going, oh my God, have you met Jill? She does da 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 da. And it makes it less transactional.
And I think that's what I need to practice. I need to shift my perspective about it, about networking, and shift it into, make it, gamify it. Turn it into, yeah, information sharing opportunity, not about me or about that other person.
I think it's okay to go into somewhere knowing that what you want to achieve too, right? Like, go in with some set goals. Like, I'm looking for a job. Like, go and meet the people that might be that door opener, mm-hmm, right? Now, they might not have the jobs directly, but they might know someone, mm-hmm, who does, or, you know, meet the future love of your life. Like, again, you might not meet them there, but they might know someone. You might get invited to a dinner. Like, there's all those different steps. And it's so hard. Like, in hindsight, it's 2020, but when you're going forward, it's like a blur.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you give us some examples of how this incredible network that you've built has really paid its dues in terms of experiences that you've had?
You know, I think the best examples I have is how it's helped me actually find employment. Again, if I do the hindsight's 2020 version of it, like, so I stumbled into TED because I worked for a technology company that had a ticketing solution. And my, you know, my target was to go and find, potential clients that would be interested in using our technology. And so I went after things that I was passionate about, TED being one of them, and met the team and convinced them that they should be using it. And eventually when I left that organization, I had gotten to know the team so well. They're like, do you want to come and help us with our ticketing? Like, I'm like, well, I've been doing it anyway. I'd love to.
Yeah.
And from there, just started to get to know more of the team, joined the production team, and then ended up taking over the production team. But I have to say, like, TED has been sort of such a centrifugal force in all of the different people that I've met, because, and again, when you find the right community that might give you what you need, whether it's skateboarding or dog sledding or, you know, like paddle, what everyone's doing right now, is you're going to find that those people that have the same interest group as you, right? Mm-hmm. And TED happens to be a very special one because there's a lot of internationals, but there's a lot of Swedes in there that happen to all, like, everyone works for pretty big organizations. Mm-hmm. And I always think, you know, volunteering is, it's such an overlooked thing. It's also very backwards in Sweden, in my experience. Like, volunteering, my whole life I've grown up volunteering, but in Sweden, like, it's almost like a lot of people don't necessarily realize that it's an opportunity to learn by doing.
Yeah.
You know, they almost see it like, I'm wasting my time. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, no, but you're giving people the opportunity to see you work, right?
I don't think that's necessarily just a Swedish thing, though. I mean, I would say up until recently, I would have felt the same about volunteering coming from the UK.
I mean, that it was a waste. Like,
not necessarily a waste of time, but just something you did if you didn't have a job. You know, it's like, what is just to fill the time.
Yeah.
And actually not really understanding how much, you know, how valuable it can be, not just for you, but for, you know, the community around you.
I remember one year I have one of my closest friends here. She's Australian. We met randomly through a mutual friend. We actually went to Dublin to volunteer for Web Summit. Well, we were both unemployed because we knew that when you go into the volunteering, you get to meet everybody in such a different context, right? Yeah. You get full access pass. You get to have those lovely conversations.
Yeah.
And for us, it was like, you know, here's an opportunity to be two women in tech and see the behind the scenes working of these incredible events.
Yeah.
And but, you know, like, you meet people and then you meet them because you're working, you know, you get to show your work ethic. You get to show what you can do. People remember you, like, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, it's also about sort of standing out. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I come back to TED here, is that when people start to see the stuff that you can put together and the fact that you're doing it with absolutely no resources, they remember you. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, when jobs come available, people, like, you're on their radar.
Yeah.
So again, my biggest thing, and I think, I mean, this is me, I can't say this to everybody, but, like, finding employment in this country is hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. So find the community that can help you balance.
I wish somebody had this conversation with me 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Because I came to Sweden with a very, very different expectation than what the reality was actually going to face. You know, even to the point where my Swedish family had said to me, you know, pretty much said to me, oh, don't worry, you speak English, you'll get a job.
Yeah.
And that was just not true. And I don't think it was because they were telling me lies, it wasn't anything, it's just that it was an assumption. But that's not how the labor market here works at all. If someone had said that to me, I would have looked at my skills, which is event management and venue management. That's my background from in London, and I probably would have sought out something like TED or I don't know, some other volunteering position within an event management umbrella of some kind, whether it was a summit, whether it was a mässan, whether it was a, you know, something like that. But I kind of didn't. I just sort of sat on my thumbs and then, you know, developed a little bit abroad. But but yeah, I think it would have been really useful for somebody to tell me how important having and building a network was here.
I think one of the things that I wish, you know, someone told me, I ended up figuring it out, but I wish someone told me, but is you don't necessarily have to find something. You can also start your own thing, like Little Bear Abroad, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which obviously takes a lot of energy and effort, yeah. And you need to have the right people around you.
Yeah.
But, you know, even TED, you can get a license for TED. It's free. You can start your own TED somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know, you just need to have the drive and the ambition and, like, the want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, yeah, but as I say that, I'm also like, oh, I wish I had my wing person. Like, you need to have the yin to your yang, right?
Going back to the analogy that I spoke about earlier about the bank yeah. of network, depositing and withdrawing. This is totally random and you may not be able to answer it. I don't know. But what is the most valuable thing that you've deposited in your network?
A hard one. I think it's the connecting people to opportunities, like, and that can mean so much. Like, it's an apartment, it's a job, it's, now I will say, state with this for the record, I do not do romantic hookups. Been there, done that. My best friend married her husband, divorced. It's like,
okay, yeah, let's not go there.
So yeah, I think it's connecting people, like, right, and them not seeing or not knowing that connection exists, and seeing it flourish. It's funny, the other podcast that you will be on in the fall, by the way. So the two there's the host, the co-host, and I'm another co-host. Called Life in the Land of Ice and Snow. I'm just going to plug it right here. So I introduced the two co-hosts, and I think they interviewed me on an episode, kind of going like, you know, so how did we meet? And I'm like, hello. You know, they're like, all right. Yeah, you. And I'm like, see, thank you.
It's interesting because I sometimes think about that with Little Bear Abroad, and I know. I mean, I don't keep a tally in my head of all the different ways that I've influenced people's lives and so on. But I know that there's people out there who have met business partners, co-founders, employers, employees, directly through Little Bear Abroad. You know, and yeah. You know, they kind of, you know, it's, and I've, of course, you know, I'm not asking for a cookie or anything like that, but it's nice to know that it's not just, we've not just encouraged personal relationships, but there's also been a kind of a stepping stone. We've acted as a stepping stone onto that, you know, professional autonomy, that everyone kind of, that it's really hard to try and get here in Sweden.
Yeah, the meeting place. Yeah, exactly.
So we know that building networks on LinkedIn and digitally is a really kind of easy way to do it. And that creates a lot of value for people. But what networking opportunities in the real world have you found most productive?
So we do these dinners called the Ugly Ladies Dinners. And let me set the scene. So every year we do the ugly Christmas sweater party.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always a whole bunch of us. And we go out to this one special place for dinner. And then these dinners were happening regularly. So I'm like, well, instead of ugly Christmas sweater, we'll just be ugly ladies. Like, it was the ugly ladies Christmas sweater party. And now we're just ugly ladies because we dropped the Christmas sweater. Which, by the way, you're going to have to come to one. But I have to say, like, they've sort of been I think the red thread through all of it, and you know, you're like, the networking comes down to like finding your tribe, your group of people, and
mm-hmm.
them being there for you. I'm trying to think of other things that I do, but like they're sort of my reality check. Like, there's no work, there's no like business. It's just great conversation.
Networking digitally or in real life?
Oh, in real life, for sure.
Because I think it's really easy for people to comfortably just go, oh, connect, connect, connect. Yeah. And then as you said to me, oh, look, we've got so many people in common. How did you meet such and such? And I'm like, I haven't met them. I don't know. I've never met them before, but we just connected. And you were just a bit like, okay.
You need to get to know. My big thing, and it drives me crazy, and this is just a LinkedIn feature that they need to fix one day, is the connect button. Like, it's just there. But would you walk into a party and just be like, you, me? Like, you wouldn't, no. Like, you'd want to get to know them. So I wish more people would use the send a personalized message.
Yeah.
Right? I want to connect with you because of, hey, Jill, I heard you do this awesome podcast. And, you know, we have a million and one mutual friends. Let's connect.
Yeah. Like, I did send you did say exactly. Like, you sent me exactly that exact message. Yeah.
Right? But I just wish more people would use that.
When I get a message like that from somebody, I'm like, I'm delighted to connect with you because, you know, it feels like they've actually gone out of their way. In the world of LinkedIn, I'm not saying that this is in any reflection in the real world at all, but it feels like they've gone out of their way to actually, you know, look at my profile, check to see if we have anything in common, look at the people that we're connected to, do a little bit of, just a little bit of research, tiny little bit of research. So I'm just like, yeah. Delighted to. Seems like a really great idea. That's great. No, I think I'm with you on the in real life networking too. But as I said earlier, I think I need to shift my perspective on how to do that. And I think I think this conversation that we're having is going to help a lot of other people shift that perspective too.
I think it all depends on what you want to achieve as well. Like, it's not. Of course, there's that transactional part, but it's like, what do you want to achieve from that specific event or something? Like, do you want to meet three people? Like, put some KPIs on you if it helps you. It's like going on a diet, right? Like, you need to have some goals to work towards. Right. I mean, and I'm gonna say, in all honesty, like, as much as I meet a million and one people and I play this game, like, I don't follow up with absolutely everybody either because I'm human.
Yeah.
I don't have hours in the day.
Yeah.
Right, so like it's not perfect on the other end, but at least, you know, at least you're making the effort.
Yeah.
My big thing is trying not to promise something that I can't deliver. Like, there's this fantastic organization called Brainpool,
mm-hmm.
which is for gifted children,
mm-hmm.
and they're always looking for really interesting speakers. So I'm like, oh, you're cool. You should come. Like, let me introduce you to Stina. Like.
How did you know? Like, I mean, this is the big question that goes into my brain. It's like how did you find out about Brainpool? How did you find out about all of these organizations?
I always ask questions like, okay, like, not like, hey, who are you and what do you do? But like, you know, try and start the conversation differently. Like, oh, what brought you here tonight? And anything special you're trying to
mm-hmm.
do? Can I get you a drink? I don't know. But then I would say in the evening, I'd probably speak to like 40 to 50 people.
Wow, that is a huge number of people.
Now I think about it, I'm like, oh my god, how did I ever do that?
Yeah. That's a huge number of people. Because I often find that, you know, when you go to some networking events, if you're not somebody, then there have been a couple of occasions that I've experienced a feeling of not alienation, but definitely kind of like, oh, just put her to the side. And how do you overcome? And if you've had that, how do you overcome that?
So I also call it wandering the halls, right? So like, when you've been somewhere often enough, you become a regular. People start to recognize you. Like, that comes with like repetitive, like attendance and so forth. And I've seen it where people. If someone can see they don't have immediate offering for somebody, or that person won't offer them something immediately, they sort of brush them aside. And that drives me crazy, right? Because you have no idea who that person is or what they do. And so, like, my experience also is, and I think this just comes from being Canadian, is like, you know, there's somebody sitting on the side of the room. Like, I'll go over there and be like, oh, you know, like, come join us. Like, come have a conversation.
Yeah.
Like, inclusive culture. I always try to, you know, make sure everyone's seen in a room and everyone's sort of included. And, you know, again, if it comes down to matchmaking in a way, like, oh, hey, you're here. And I might put them together and be like, hey, you guys have this in common. You know, when it does happen, you have to like, not let it get to you, right? Like, I mean, I usually put myself in the mind of the person, like, what are they doing? Have they had dinner? Like, are they about to go give a big talk? Like, you know, was this the right time? Do I have actually anything interesting to say? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And not everything's going to be a perfect moment, right?
Yeah.
It's very optimistic.
But if for some unforeseen circumstances you ended up moving to another country somewhere and you had to start all over again, how would you start again?
Grogon International, 100%. I would start with one of those communities where everyone is willing to lend a hand and help and has the advice.
That's really interesting. The difference in the last 10 years is that these communities, these digital, these, you know, online web-based communities have grown to such an enormous size that they are global, they are everywhere. There's no borders anymore when it comes to communities, which is amazing.
Yeah, but then it comes down to the community manager, right? Which is such an integral role. I don't think people realize what a community manager really actually does. So, I mean, you might go and find one of these communities that does have a global presence and then they're dead because nobody's managing them.
Yeah.
So I think it's like, love your community manager. We should have one of those sort of
pin badges.
Love your community manager. Maybe that exists already too. I'm sure this
probably does. Yeah. Let's make it into a GIF.
You've been listening to The Swedish Podcast, hosted by Jill and edited by Cecile. If you'd like to know more about what we do, you can follow us on any of your favourite social media platforms at @the_swede_ish. And if you'd like to rate, review, even if it's just one star, we don't care. Tell us what you think about the podcast on your favourite podcast platform.